The Radio Today programme with Broadcast Bionics, working with the world's leading broadcasters and equipment suppliers to transform industry standard technologies and workflows.
Welcome to the March Roundtable from Radio Today. We're back at Guilt Free Post in Soho, which should always be your studio of choice when you're round this neck o' the woods. We have got a stellar celebrity panel. They're going to introduce themselves.
Starting
with you.
Okay, fine.
You're the best we could get.
Yeah, I know. And that just tells you enough, doesn't it? I'm John Holmes. Hello. Hi.
Hello there.
Hi there.
And who are you?
Oh, what? Oh, okay, fine. I thought I was a celebrity. I thought everyone knew. I thought that's what you were saying.
Yeah, you're a celebrity in a Love Island kind of way.
That's exactly why I've got my top off. I write and I produce and I do comedy things and present and all sorts of stuff.
And on your right?
I'm Catherine Kerr. I'm not a celebrity. So I'm a producer and a writer and I run Podcast Pioneers, which is a production company. And we produce branded podcast content, audio content and scripted narrative.
And next to me?
And I'm Ian Dale. I'm also not a celebrity, which is why I haven't been on Celebrity Big Brother. I present the evening show on LBC and present five podcasts.
Five podcasts. Do you want to name some of them?
For the Many is the biggest.
That's
one,
the one you do with Jackie Smith, former Home Secretary.
Full of smut.
When do you think we'll get a new former Home Secretary?
Sooner than a lot of people possibly have thought. There might be a pretty vacant slot there soon. Boom, boom.
Right, OK. We're going to talk about the BBC to start with, BBC Radio in particular. You're always described, Ian, as a right-wing observer. What do you think is the end game here from our current government? What do they want to do with the BBC? Just put the willies up it, or do they want to actually change something?
I think they want to provoke the BBC into actually doing some serious thinking about what it's there for in the 2020s. Because if you think about it, its structures haven't really changed very much. What it does hasn't really changed very much. The licence fee hasn't changed at all. And one of the things I'm fascinated by is the reluctance of the BBC ever to embrace change or be the driver of change. And they've got a real opportunity now. They needn't let the government dictate terms to them. They could say, OK, well, we understand maybe the licence fee isn't as appropriate now as it was in the 1950s or 1980s or whatever. So here's what we propose to do. I see no sign of any thinking along that lines from within the BBC.
Because change at the BBC usually means cuts. And they would argue that they've done quite a lot of cutting. And I guess they would also say, hang on a minute, Ian, we've launched BBC Sounds, we're launching this new thing, Radio 1 Dance. They would say they are embracing change, but they're not giving anything up, are they?
Well, they're not embracing change. Radio 1 Dance, does the world really need Radio 1 Dance? When you've got a multiplicity of commercial radio stations, whether they're Global Bow or whoever, doing all of this stuff anyway, why does the BBC see its job as to compete with the commercial sector when it's actually providing a service quite well? What they should be doing is proper public service broadcasting, doing things that the commercial sector will never do.
John, you've had your run-ins with the BBC. I think you're currently doing quite well in that they've recommissioned your Skewer, which is great news because it's a fantastic show. What's it like working with the BBC at the moment?
Well, I think I sort of agree with Ian. I think that a lot of the time, the BBC do remain on the back foot about things. And I think that's because there's always been a level of panic. And it's not just technology. If you look at every time the BBC gets hounded in the press, it always panics and doesn't quite know what to do and tries to think, well, we need to appear to be doing the right thing. Quickly, have a meeting. What's the right thing we need to be appear to be doing? And then a month has gone by, and so it's playing catch-up all the time. And I think you're right. I remember doing the Now Show many years ago, and it was one of their first ever podcasts, and no one really heard of a podcast. And there was all sorts of complicated contractual obligations about how we would be paid extra for a podcast or not, because nobody really knew the rules, and whether or not a podcast could be longer. And then this rule came in about you can't broadcast anything on a podcast that hasn't already been broadcast if it's a spin-off of a radio program. And you think, why? And obviously BBC Sounds is now addressing all of this.
And there was even a period, wasn't there, where the word podcast was banned by Radio 4. You weren't allowed to say the word.
Yeah.
Because it meant you were publicising an Apple product.
Well, there's all of this stuff going on. You know, the BBC is a magnificent institution. I think the licence fee is a good thing. I think the value for money is fantastic. And people comparing it to Netflix, as many commentators have said, that's just a false analogy. It's not the same thing at all. You know, you're not going to get the same thing from Netflix as you get from the BBC. So I think all of that is vital, and I think it should continue. But yes, it does need to change with the times. I think it will.
Catherine, how does this impact radio, though? Because we don't pay a radio licence, do we? We pay something called the TV licence.
Yeah, and therein lies the problem also, given that it's seemingly free to access. It's almost, radio sits in this area that it feels almost as if it's a right, more so because we don't have that association in the tax we pay, essentially. I mean, I suppose there's an argument that the licence fee is a subscription, and what we're actually talking about more recently is paywalls. And so if you were to put BBC radio content behind some kind of paywall, I mean, good luck right
well, I don't
now
know
because
how technically
there's a case
you do it. You know, while we're still using FM, how on earth do you stop people listening to an FM broadcast if they haven't paid a subscription of some sort?
Well, presumably that's why they're so hungry to go after young audiences who are adopting apps and in-app listening through BBC Sounds and the like. But at the moment, obviously, it's not a viable option because it doesn't serve as many people and people aren't adopting it in that way.
What would we keep, Ian, if the BBC was to have to cut back a lot in radio? What are the crown jewels that the BBC should continue to have?
Well, I don't think anybody would argue that Radio 4 and Radio 5 Live shouldn't continue. I mean, 5 Live, I think, has changed over the years. But Radio 1 and Radio 2, is there really an argument that that's public service broadcasting? I mean, yes, it's providing entertainment, but only in the same sense that is done in the commercial sector, particularly Radio 1. Radio 2, you could argue.
No, I don't agree at all. I mean, I spent much of the 90s making that argument.
You can listen to Radio 1 and Radio 2, and they are, well, the presenters are allowed to speak for more than 20 seconds for a start, which you don't often get in commercial radio. And commercial radio's rotation on songs is appalling. I know the reasons they do it. I don't agree with them, but I think that there's an argument that the BBC don't do that at all. And their presenters are personalities all the way through the day. If you look at Virgin, Chris Evans is allowed to do what he wants in the morning. No one else is the rest of the day.
But you could, I mean, I hate to use this word because it'll be incendiary, but you could privatise Radio 1 and put some restrictions on what the new owners would be allowed to do with it. I think that's the model that I think at least should be considered. I'm not particularly advocating it, but I think that's the sort of thinking that needs to happen here. But what we've got is a situation where TV is eating up all of the money. Sport is eating up a huge amount of money. I mean, if you look at the economics of Match of the Day, for 4 million viewers, I think they're paying, what, £210 million a year or something? That is a third of the radio budget, almost. So I think there's got to be a sense of priorities within the BBC. What is absolutely necessary that they continue to do? And news and current affairs surely has got to be at the core of it. And yet news and current affairs have taken a lot of the cuts.
I'd add to that that in trying to compete in a commercial manner with other offerings, the BBC isn't actually delivering its remit as well. And if you think that they're just going to go for the numbers and take in terms of podcasts, for example, you're going to see the output changing to be geared towards the kind of the masses and the many, the Love Island podcasts and those mainstream appeal things. So actually, you would get a loss of programming quality and diversity in more niche areas and mediums. So essentially not serving a broader spectrum if you're just going for the numbers.
You're damned if you do and you're damned if you don't at the BBC, of course, because if you do the kind of specialist, as it were, niche programming that will not be done by commercial radio, then people say, well, I pay this licence fee and it doesn't do anything for me. But if you do EastEnders and, you know, the other big blockbusters, people say, well, that could be funded commercially. So it's always a hard line to tread, John, isn't it?
Yes, and I think that is exactly what we're talking about. That's the future line and where it goes off into the future. You know, everyone has to follow it to some extent, and the BBC just have to decide what side they are. I think that's a really interesting point about the relationship between TV and radio, Ian was saying there, because radio always feels like the poor second to people who work in it and love it, I think. But it's, you know, the Radio Times. When was the last time a radio programme was on the front of the Radio Times? You know, it's not a thing. And those figures for the Match of the Day, if they just took that money away and put Match of the Day in the corner somewhere and just went, have this money, radio, I think the BBC's strength is in radio. I think it makes world-class television, but actually the jewel in the crown should be radio, and is radio, because that is what makes it unique.
I think part of the problem is that when the BBC decides to get into something new, it has to be the only player in it. We saw that, 10 or 15 years ago when One Word Radio started. I used to do a little books programme on that. And then the BBC decided, no, we can't allow this. We'll have BBC 7 instead, which then morphed into Radio 4 Extra. Within almost months, one word was out of existence. They did it in magazines. They decided they were getting to magazine publishing, driving a huge number of perfectly good magazines out of print. And now you've got them starting to do it in podcasts. Well, not starting, they are doing it in podcasts. They were late to the game in podcasts, so they started BBC Sounds, which in some ways is very good. But they're actually doing what the mainstream media did to bloggers back 10 years ago, where you had lots of brilliant independent bloggers, virtually none of whom exist now because the mainstream media decided to embrace blogging. And I think that's where we've got to be really careful about the BBC's monopolistic tendencies. And so this Radio 1 dance, these other 20 podcasts and stations that they're starting, why are they spending millions of pounds on that sort of thing when they're cutting millions of pounds from the news and current affairs budget?
Jonathan Wall, who runs BBC Sounds, is a listener to this podcast. He is saying that BBC Sounds is now a useful brand for younger listeners. Do we know anybody under 30 who ever says, I'm a big fan of BBC Sounds?
You're looking at me, Trevor.
Yeah, because you're going
to
say
you're the
no.
nearest to under 30 that we've got here.
I'll do my best. No.
We don't, do we? I mean, it seems to me to be a brand that hasn't taken off at all in the audience that it's aimed at.
It's slightly unfair. I think it's trying to. And there were big problems with BBC Sounds. It is improving. I'm not just saying that because Jono listens at all. But it is. I mean, their marketing was wrong for a start. There were very, very patronising posters on the sides of bus shelters, which sort of said things like, it was like your granddad sort of trying to sound hip. It was sort of like, hey, influencers, come and listen to this, with, you know, a sort of diversity picture of somebody holding some headphones or something. And it was just, what is that?
And you did the voiceover, didn't you?
Exactly. Yeah. They need to work out, I think, and they're getting there with it. I mean, the technology is improving. It's still a bit weird that if you want to listen to something on Radio 4, you go to BBC Sounds and you type it in and it doesn't come up. Mm. So you have to go to the Radio 4 website to find it, which then links you to the right page on BBC Sounds, but the search function doesn't seem to work. So there are these niggly bits, but overall, I think it is there. Way into to the young
people. Other thing about this is that most people, I imagine, I certainly only use one podcast provider, iTunes, just because I'm lazy and I haven't found a better one. And it really annoys me that BBC Sounds podcasts aren't often on iTunes. So am I really going to go to two or three different podcast providers to get my podcast? No, in the end, I don't listen to them.
Also, it's not called iTunes anymore. It's called Apple Podcasts.
I'm so 1990s.
That's the argument about, you're going to go to Netflix. My huge problem at the moment, I think, is, right, oh, I want to watch, I don't know, The Walking Dead. Where is that now? And then you find yourself looking at Netflix, Apple, Now TV, and then by
and
that
now you've
point,
got Disney,
your evening's
Box.
Gone, and you might as well go to bed.
Yeah, it's one of my pet hates, actually.
What would you do, Ian, if BBC Sounds came to you and said, actually, we'd like to put For the Many on our platform as well?
I would probably go to James Rear and say, BBC Sounds want to do this. What's your decision, James? I think I know what it would be as well.
Catherine.
It's a behavioural thing, very much. So if we're looking at, you know, attracting younger people to using a new app, providing them programmes and marketing, as John says, those programmes in a way that's going to create word of mouth and actually move them from one place to the other where they're already listening, you know, the Spotify or whatever it is key. So actually, I think the winners in this space so far are the people who are looking at it from a behavioural perspective. So look how Spotify has started rolling out podcasts. People are listening to their music. It's a habit. They're there to kind of adapt emotion, or it's complementary to what they're doing. They've already got their headphones on. So, yep, TV will be habitual. And so that model of browsing around your different providers on your television in the evening is one thing. But actually allowing people to do that in a native space easily is probably the biggest barrier.
It's the Radio Today roundtable for March, and we'll be back after this.
The Radio Today programme with Broadcast Bionics, creators of the Bionics Studio. Listening, watching, reacting to, and learning from every spoken word, caller, tweet, and SMS to unmix, unlock, and understand your content. The Bionics Studio transforms everything about radio except the way you make it.
Today. Welcome back. We're in Soho. It's the Radio Today roundtable for March. I just said that. And John Holmes is here. Catherine Kerr is here. And Ian Dale is here too. Are we going to the Arias this week?
Might do.
Some of us on the radio.
So you can't, well, you could go later, I suppose, for the drinks.
I really couldn't.
You nominated. Oh, of course, you don't enter, do you?
Let's just skate over that one.
Awkward moment. Tell us why you don't enter, Ian.
Thank you, John.
Above my pay grade.
Moving on. Catherine, are you going?
I might go and support a couple of friends who are nominated.
Okay.
Yeah.
So the Palladium doesn't feel
How
very
does that work?
Modern and cool.
You can't eat there, can you?
I believe there's something called drinks.
Not bowl
later.
Food, please.
Oh, God, no. I don't think. Well, I know nothing. But
worst invention ever, apart from spinach.
Spinach in a bowl, is that your worst? Yeah.
What about you, John?
Well, do you know what? I got the dates slightly mixed up, and I thought I couldn't go and wasn't going to go. I mean, I wasn't nominated, obviously, but I've still got the award from last year when I got a bronze. So technically, I could go and physically hand over the no thing I got to whoever gets the bronze this year. And also, I'm not having to do anything there this year, like be nominated or present an award. So,
and
frankly,
you sometimes
I
write
sort
a script
of,
for these kind of
well,
things.
Well, indeed. So I've no hand in this.
You've presented these evenings, haven't you?
I've done that as well.
Do I not remember you doing the Arkivas?
You do probably remember that. Yeah, absolutely right.
Which of these matters
axed it.
Most? You know,
the year I won.
Arkiva's not around so much now. Arias are here, APAs. Which of these awards mean anything to anyone's mantelpiece, John?
Well, I think it's nice to be recognised by your peers, isn't it? I suppose that's
it says
the,
here.
That's the, yes, exactly. That's what I'm reading. Yeah, at least it isn't given over to the public vote, because look what happens when they get involved.
What do they know about
trust
anything?
The people?
Does it matter to you, Ian? Do you like receiving a
I mean, who doesn't like receiving an award? Well, look, I came into this industry quite late in life. I was, 48 when I started LBC 10 years ago. And when I won the Arkiva Award for Radio Presenter of the Year, that meant an awful lot to me. It was only 3 years after I'd started. And as a bit of a novice, and that's kind of your peers voting for it. That did mean an awful lot. So I do regret that, I suppose, we're not involved in as many awards things. But the Global Awards are on Thursday as well. Don't forget that.
Absolutely. And will you be nominated in that?
No, because I'm on air. So clearly I can't go.
Now, I would like to say, not just because you're here, but I asked you earlier what out of the BBC you would protect if it got emasculated. What out of commercial radio I'd keep would include LBC.
Thank LBC. God for that. That would have been a bit awkward if you said that would be the first thing that you'd get.
LBC has in its time been awful. And it's not awful. In fact, it's the very opposite of awful. It's really, really, really strong. As somebody who works on it, why is it as good as it is?
I think it's evolved, it's changed over the years, and I'm not just saying this because he's my boss, he's now the big boss, but I mean, James Rears had a huge impact on the station, and the fact that he took us national in 2014, that had a big impact. Now, the audience at the moment, I would say, is probably, I don't know exactly what the figures are, but I think it's about 45, 55 London national, and that's where the audience can increase nationally, and that's partly why it has increased. But I think we've become part of the news agenda, in which we just weren't back in 2010. I mean, we used to think it was good if we got a sort of ordinary backbencher onto the station. Well, now you're disappointed if you don't get a cabinet minister. And we're included in all of the media rounds that the cabinet ministers do, sometimes to the exclusion of some of the BBC stations. Which,
particularly at the moment.
So I think we have a place in news and current affairs, which we didn't 10 years ago. And we are part of the national conversation, which we weren't 10 years ago. And I think we've got, I mean, everyone has their own views about the presenters and all the rest of it, but there is a broad mix of presenters over the schedule. And if you actually look in the Brexit debate, everyone seemed to regard us as sort of Brexit central. Yet if you look by hours and number of presenters, there's far more Remain than Brexit. So
people used to say about pirate radio that all the jocks got together in the evening. So you'd find, I don't know, John Peel and Kenny Everett having a chat. Do you guys socialise? Is there a kind of LBC presenter wine bar or green room or something where you all hang out?
Not really, because you don't see people. If you're at the other end of the day, I mean, I see Eddie Mayer, I see Tom Swarbrick, see Sheila Fogarty a bit, but James and Nick, they're at the other end of the day, so I don't see them so much. So we see each other if there's company meetings, the quarterly Rajar meeting, obviously. But it's not, no, I mean, I wouldn't say generally we do.
You listen to LBC, John?
I do listen to LBC, yeah. I used to be on LBC when it wasn't successful. So
I wonder if the two things are somehow related.
I used to do Friday Drive on LBC, and I think I did some late nights as well. What used to be interesting, I used to call it, with people just calling in, I used to call it jousting with mentals a lot of the time, which is highly inappropriate, I realise. But that's what it felt like.
But in those
like.
Days, you could get away with it.
And also in those days, that's what it was as well. It was that was its raison d'etre. And it was a lot of fun, certainly, but then it did change. And now it's absolutely regarded, and rightly, as a serious news outlet. And I think it's not just the station as well. It's the position it managed to get itself into, as you were saying. It's very much part of the whole agenda now, and it's not unusual at all to see, you know, LBC clips. And the way, you know, the studios are geared up for video and all of that stuff. You know, Global have always been leaps ahead on that. You know, their video. If you look at, you know, and I'd say this, I've worked everywhere, come on. You know, I worked at Talk Radio.
Not for very long, though.
Not for very long, no. clearly. But their, you know, Talk Radio's idea of a video was a sort of half camera hanging off a thing on the wall.
That's been really important, actually, in developing. And James O'Brien would say this, in that I think, certainly over Brexit, his Brexit viral monologues that went viral, they were kind of the making of him in a way. And they have played a massive part in attracting a younger audience. If you look at the demographics of the LBC listener now, we have got the 15 to 24 age group in a way that no BBC station has. We beat many music stations in that age group as well. And particularly when there's a terror attack or something, people immediately come to us because they know we're going to be talking about it, whereas Five Live could be sort of at Wimbledon or something.
It's become expert in the viral clip and that short burst attention span, the youngsters like that, and the way the videos are cut as well. And I know it's kind of automated, but it seemed that you seem to have got it better.
Well, they've invested a huge amount of money, particularly in the last 6 months.
Catherine's trying to get in here.
No, actually, I think, Ian, you were about to make the exact same point. But I was also at Global at the time that transition took place. Just suddenly seeing the amount of investment that went into the studio facilities, just kind of actually even the culture of the place, the lighting and the calibre of every tiny detail, all tied up with that branding thing as well, I think has been a really strong and smart move. And actually having then spent time at other radio networks where they haven't quite thought about that visual side of things, it really has made a huge difference.
And the difference it makes to you as a presenter is massive. We used to basically have a broom cupboard as a studio. When they brought the new studio in, I think it was April 2015, just before the general election, it actually made me a better presenter, I think, because you feel in control. You have this massive desk in front of you. You've got all the lights, and it is essentially now sometimes a TV production. I mean, our election night programme, that essentially was a TV programme. And that does constrain you sometimes, because I think we're moving towards where every programme will be streamed for the whole thing live. So when you have one of John's interesting callers come on and you're sort of making a signal to your producer, you can't do that in that environment. And I know, I mean, I'm quite gesticulatory when I'm talking to people, and I know that at some point I probably would come a cropper, but there we go.
As a listener as well, you have such a diversity of radio programming, podcasts, and, you know, you have such a choice of things you could listen to at any one time if you want an authority on a subject, or, you know, depending on where you're coming at it from. Actually having that funnel in place as well, so that you are promoting across other channels, helps people refine, I think, their proposition and makes it very clear who you're speaking to.
We must take another pause, and we'll be back to find out what our guests have been listening to.
Original music for this podcast was composed by
Macasso. It was. Let's just pause from the roundtable for a moment to tell you about Clean Feed. If you haven't tried it yet, what have you been doing? It's a great tech solution that could help out with your OB for your radio show or your radio station, or maybe even with a podcast idea that you've got and you just want to be able to connect to guests in something better than on a phone line. Clean Feed just uses a browser, no fancy hardware required, and you can connect in decent quality. It's really simple to use. You can even do the recording for your podcast guests or your show right within the web browser application. Give it a go, see what the quality is like for yourself. There's a completely free version, or you can upgrade to the paid version for extra features. Find out more about it at cleanfeed.net. Right, back to the roundtable with Trevor and his lovely guests.
Ian Dale, Catherine Kerr and John Holmes are with me for the March roundtable. Let's start with you, Ian. Two choices. Let's have your first.
The first is a podcast which is not that well known. It's called The Politics of Sound, which sounds a bit intimidating, but it's run by a guy called Ian Carnegie. And what he does is he invites you on the podcast and you have to talk about your three favourite albums. And he has one guest per podcast and they're all from the world of politics. And I did it a few months ago. Jackie Smith, my partner in crime on For the Many, she did it last month. And he really does get stuff out of you. He's got a very disarming style. He's clearly done a lot of homework before he does it. So for the first half an hour, he'll talk to you about your life and background and all the rest of it. Then you get into talking about your three favourite albums. And you're not allowed to pick one that anybody else has picked. So I couldn't pick Bat Out of Hell because John Whittingdale had got there before me. and Jackie Smith couldn't pick Parallel Lines because I got there before she did.
Okay, we've got a clip of Jackie on the Politics of Sound.
The breakthrough single from the album was, of course, the wonderful Ever Fallen in Love with Someone You Shouldn't Have Fallen in Love With. Was that one of the major factors for deciding on this album and probably buying it back in the day?
It was. But I sort of thought, I thought I need to be virtuous and not just listen to that. So I need to listen to the rest of the album. And of course, in those days, the way in which you listened to albums was you put it on, you played it from the beginning to the end, then you turned it over and you played, you know, yes, the other side. And I used to listen to, you know, and I did listen to the whole
album. And did you look at all of the album artwork and all the rest while you were listening sometimes?
I wasn't quite as geeky as...
I'm afraid I probably was.
I bet
was.
You were.
Yeah.
I bet you were.
Yeah.
No, I can't, you know, I'm not, I'm afraid, I'm going to disappoint your listeners by not being able to sort of tell you arcane things about the producer and all the other bits and bobs. I'm afraid it was simply about, I'd heard it, I loved the energy, and I, you know, it wasn't the first album that I bought, but it was about living, you know, that time in my life
it
and having
seen... It brings you back to a time and a place.
Oh, and an energy and a sort of joyous... bouncing aroundy feeling.
Listening to that, Catherine, it's really noticeable that there's a lot of P-pops in it. Do you think it matters on podcasts whether the quality is up to what we would call broadcast quality?
I think it does matter, yes. And I think it says a lot about the company that's creating it. And as audio people, we probably notice it a lot more and it matters a lot more to us. However, if the content's great, then... people are able to hear what you're saying and access it and, you know, enjoy the talent, then...
Can I totally disagree with that?
Of course.
The For the Many podcast that I do with Jackie, I'm at my home in Tunbridgewell. She's in Malvern on a Sunday morning and I have my laptop and we do it through IPDTL. We both have dodgy Wi-Fi connections, so sometimes it's not studio quality. And I don't think that people... mind about that too much. I think they will give you, even though it is an LBC podcast, they kind of get that we're not doing it in a studio usually, and people will make allowances.
I'll put the P-pops back in again.
I think there's a big difference between the quality of that and perhaps some, I assume Trevor is recording to is more at-home recordings.
Kat, let's have your first choice.
I have brought a clip from an American production called Gaslight. It's a scripted drama, 10 short 15-minute parts that was released last November. And it's what I think is interesting about it is that its calibre of production is so high. They've really brought a kind of almost TV approach to storytelling. They've really invested this company in great sound design and they've really used the format in a fascinating way. So it's really suspenseful. But I think the thing that interests me most about what this company are doing is that they're telling stories and kind of bucking the trend of what we might understand as audio drama. They're also kind of adding an aspect of addressing more mainstream issues as well. So with this story, it's about, I don't want to give too much away, but it's about a girl who disappears and then comes back from years in nobody knows where she's disappeared to, and there's some strange manipulative thing going on. And so what it's actually addressing is kind of issues of trust of relationships and this kind of fractured relationship with her friend. And I think what's really interesting about that is if you take the rise in conversational podcasts and people are, you know, addressing issues around mental health or relationships in that very candid way, this is just using the fiction format to do something really quite different.
Here's a clip of Gaslight.
Maybe it was a mistake to come here, but I promise you that calling anyone will only make things worse.
Will Ben make things worse?
Ben is a great man. Ben isn't afraid to make the hard choices if needed. If that's what it comes to, he'll have no other option than to make an example of me. This will only be a reflection of my failure for the family.
What failure? Did he send you here, Danny, or are you running from him?
Shit.
Is that him again? Danny, stop. Danny, look at me. This is not how a great man acts. Can you listen to me for a second? Danny!
We got a clean baby.
I should go.
No. Tom, give us a second, Danny.
No. I'm sorry. Listen, I shouldn't have come back. I don't really know what I was thinking, just popping back up in your life.
Maybe you
this.
Showed up so I can help you.
Tom, stay. I'm gonna go, okay? Just thank you both for having me.
Danny.
Yeah, Danny, talk to Rebecca. It's fine. I'll go in the other room.
You said maybe I could help you. Let me try, Danny. Please let me try.
I don't need that kind of help, Rebecca. I just need to
All
leave.
All right, I'm sorry, Danny, but if you walk out that door, I will have to call the police and your parents. Please just sit.
John Holmes, your first choice, please.
I'm going to head to BBC Sounds. I know.
Hi, Jono.
It took me ages to find this. Didn't. This is a thing called Tom Neenan is Not All Men. Tom Neenan's a stand-up and a writer. He's the lead writer on the MASH Report on telly. And he came up with this idea for a podcast where I think Something Else make it, and Clarissa Maycock is a brilliant producer. She produces it. And it's a sort of spoof feminism podcast in which he is just kind of Alan Partridge-esque, I suppose, tries to understand feminism, but gets it spectacularly wrong all of the time. But what's interesting about it, because that would be an easy spoof, you'd think, but there's a sort of sitcom developing underneath as well, in that one of the women on his panel who just despair of everything he says as he tries to say the right thing but gets it really wrong. Is his ex, but she's now going out with this other podcaster who's more successful than him. So there's this whole underlying jealousy of both of her and this guy's podcast. And every week's a different sort of subject. So they discuss cancel culture. It's all very woke. And, you know, they define masculinity and then detoxify it. And how to be a disabled ally is a particular strength when he's got a disabled person in the studio, but gets that very wrong as well. It's just very funny.
Here's a clip from the edition about sexual harassment.
It was once the case that sexual harassment was strictly the pursuit of James Bond and Cockney window cleaners, but sadly, not anymore. Now sexual harassers are literally everywhere. You may have seen a recent viral video of a woman walking silently through New York while being catcalled, wolf-whistled and horse-taunted, made that last one up, by all and sundry, but it was still a really terrible watch. Well, to prove sexual harassment on the streets is out of control, I'm pounding the pavements of central London to see how much harassment a man like me has to deal with. To give you a mental picture, I'm wearing some slim-fit black jeans, a white shirt that cost me £85 in the sale, and thick-rimmed glasses, which suggest that while I'm aware of fashion, I'm by no means a slave to it. So, I'm looking good. Let's see how much harassment I have to deal with. Oh. So I thought I was being catcalled there, but just an old lady struggling with her shopping. It's not useful to me at this moment. Oh, here we go. Some wolf whistling. You right? Oh, it's just a big issue, Stella. Lots of people even reticent to even make eye contact with me.
So there's Tom Neenan. John, just while we're passing, talking about language... Mm. I saw a little tweet this week from Matt Deegan talking about the news quiz on Radio 4.
Oh, yeah.
And how even in prime time, as it were, daytime, you can say shit now on Radio 4.
You can't on LBC.
I'm absolutely
sure
you can't.
I got dumped the other day for saying bitching.
No.
I wasn't talking about a woman. I was saying he bitched about him and I got dumped.
Seems a little harsh.
Well, I told my producer that. I can tell you.
I can imagine. Did you swear at the producer?
No.
Did he dump for you?
Because you've had your moments with language, John.
Yes, yeah. Not on the BBC, though, because there are procedures in place at the BBC. Well, that's I very much enjoyed making the skewer recently, okay? And obviously, the compliance form is a lot of fun. And I love filling in compliance forms. And I will often, I'm going to tell you this and probably shouldn't, but I often write things on the compliance form that are nothing to do with the programme, just to see if anybody checks, yeah. Right? So once I was producing...
They will now.
I was producing a stand-up show for the Asian Network, right, in the radio theatre. I was kind of the token, you know, and I wrote on the compliance form, sort of midway through the programme, a live bear mauls one of the studio audience to death. Nobody mentioned it. Nobody. And I was thinking, at least pick... Then for the skewer, I wrote down, 13 minutes, 42 seconds, the strobe lighting. Okay, right. And then I got a note back in a sort of email conversation I was having. with compliance, just saying, thank you for the note about the strobe lighting. We'll keep our eye on that. Then, oh, you do read them. Excellent. So, but in terms of language, yes, I mean, I think there's always the question. It's never done without asking somebody upstairs. That's for sure. It has to be clear.
John, let's go straight on to your second choice.
It would be, this is an American podcast, because I love adverts for Squarespace. Can't get enough of them. This is called This Paranormal Life. There are thousands of paranormal podcasts which investigate things. They start off, of course, investigating the big things you've heard of, and then really, as the series go on, they're drilling down into things. You go, what is even this? But this one takes listener suggestions. And what intrigued me about it is two guys, Kit and Rory, they're very funny. They tell the story, but we interject all the time with, this can't possibly be real, or can it? And then they sort of even decide at the end whether or not there's any merit to these stories at all. The one that interested me was the thing about the Hexham Heads. I don't know whether you're familiar with the Hexham Heads. They were two stone heads that were discovered back in the 1970s. And these paranormal events started happening around these stone heads, including a werewolf coming into their house. Now, the reason I remember it is because as a kid in about 1970, mid-70s, tiny child watching Nationwide, that's right, the forerunner to the One
Michael
Show.
Michael Barrett.
Yeah, yeah. They did a film about it, and it terrified me as a child. So that story has stayed with me forever. So to hear these American guys discussing it in a very sort of offhand sort of way kind of really drew me in. But it's funny, if you like sort of paranormal stories and mystery nonsense, which I do, I recommend it.
Well, I'm glad you mentioned that episode, because here's a clip from another one.
When Donnie came down, he had a strange look on his face. Very, very white. It looked like he was in pain.
Jesus, Don, you look like you've seen a ghost. Are you okay?
Never been better. You know, I'm actually stuffed from the funeral snack, so I'm going to turn in.
What? You were so hungry. You specifically asked for 3 steaks for dinner. You made us cook the steaks as soon as we got home.
Well, you know, grief expresses itself in weird ways. All right, good night, everyone.
Wait. What are those scratches on your arm? Did you hurt yourself up there?
Damn it, Bob. Look, there's no easy way to say this, but I think I was attacked by a demon in your bathroom.
This paranormal life. Thank you, John. Catherine, what's your second choice?
My second choice is just something I've noticed this week and started listening to, which is a series from The Telegraph, which they're releasing as a serial called Crossfire. And what I think is interesting about it is that essentially it's trying to take a British view on our involvement in the US-Russia election-fixing scandal, something that is going to become relevant all over again. The clip that I've picked is they've got an interview with Rob Goldstone.
Used to work at LBC.
Who did, yes. Yeah. So it's a very strange episode, this one. So they've gone really close up on this guy's story. He was a journalist, a radio person, ended up in publicity and set up a meeting between some Russians and some important Trump people. And it's just kind of his story that says essentially nothing went on. I mean, it's great as a story in itself because it really keeps you hooked the way it's told. A newspaper is essentially creating content that complements what they're doing in terms of news output.
Here's a clip.
Unlike some of the stories on this podcast so far, this one is about just a single man and a single episode. Robert Goldstone's story is one of confidence, charisma, and let's face it, blaggery. It will take us from Fleet Street to Vegas to the heart of a presidential campaign. It says, I think, something fascinating about Donald Trump's inner circle, which remains as relevant for the 2020 campaign as it was in 2016. It's an insight into the chaos and the characters who thrive within it. You'll be hearing a lot from Goldstone. As you listen, it's worth considering a few things. Do you believe his story? And if so, what does it say about the President of the United States and his closest advisors?
There's Crossfire from The Telegraph. And what we haven't mentioned yet, before we come on to your final recommendation, Ian, is the announcement that The Times, talking of newspapers moving into audio, is going to launch Times Radio, and it's already stolen John Pienaar from the BBC. Do we think that's likely to be a successful format, Ian?
If you look at talk radio, or as they call it, talk back radio in Australia, you have 11 speech stations in Sydney. And we have one or two in this country, LBC and then talk radio. So you would think that there ought to be a market for it. But When I listened to Stig Abel on your podcast a few weeks ago, talking for what, 15 or 20 minutes with a colleague about the whole thing, afterwards I thought, well, what is the strategy here? Because if the strategy is to try and compete with Radio 4, you're not going to compete with a £110 million budget with a £10 million budget, which is what I understand that they've got. I've seen what I think is their likely lineup. All great people, but you can't
do tell, Ian.
No.
So Nikki Campbell then?
No, actually, I don't know who the breakfast one is, but I think I know who most of the others might be.
Nick Robinson?
Look, you're not going to get me.
John Holmes.
But should we say that there is little different there that is, I think, will attract people across from Radio 4 or LBC or wherever. Now, Talk Radio was set up to compete with LBC. I make no comment on that, but I leave you to judge whether they've been successful in
that.
Well,
I was there when it started, of course. And it's very interesting how that changed, because the brief when I was hired was, we don't want a newsy news station. We want a rock and roll, a music station, but without the music. We want it to be rock and roll. We want it to be personalities. We want, you know, come and do your thing, like you, that thing you do. You know, that weird thing you do? Do that in the afternoons. And then...
And they said the same to Ian Lee in the evenings.
Exactly, exactly. Then it was decided that actually they would go chasing LBC. I don't think that was necessarily, or at least that's not how it's communicated to me when I joined. But then it very quickly, I say quickly, 2 years changed. And obviously then they got bought out by the Times people, you know, by Murdoch and stuff. So that was when they wanted to align it with a brand. And I do remember when I was let go, or my contract was not renewed, the phrase that sticks with me was, we've listened, yeah, this is, you know, when the new management came in, we've listened to your programme. I know, I saw you standing through the glass with your arms folded.
Never there's a got good sign. There's got to be a podcast, John, about you being fired from radio stations.
Well, it would get...
Because you have got a fund of fine stories.
I really do have, yeah. But the quote that I got in the meeting was, we've listened to your show, and we don't think it fits with the core brand values of the Sun newspaper. And I said, you're absolutely right. Now give me my payoff, I'm out of here.
But they're not going to have callers. They're not going to have adverts. So they have got 60 minutes to fill, 24 hours a day. And I would challenge any new presenter to come into a station like that and be able to talk for 60 minutes an hour, even if you've got one or two guests with you. That, I suspect, is going to be a very big challenge for them.
That brings us very neatly to your final recommendation, somebody who certainly could talk for an hour. It's Chris Moyles.
And I could see him on LBC, actually, because he's quite into his politics. I knew who Chris Moyles was before he joined Radio X, but had never listened to him. And I suppose I regarded him as a bit of a loudmouth. And I don't know how I came to listen to his podcast, which, for people who've never listened to it, he and his gang, they do about 15, 30 minutes of original content, and then they play the best of the show during the week. And somehow, they completely got me hooked. I think I've only ever listened to that show twice live, but I love the podcast. I love the interaction between him and his team. And they've had a bit of a change of personnel once or twice, which you think, well, will that work? It does. They've got some very in-jokes. Most of them work. One or two don't. And Chris, I wrote a review of his podcast once and said, I hate the reverse words thing, which he now keeps mentioning on his show, that the fact that I hate it. And he does this sort of LBC skit from time to time. And Johnny Vaughan's just launched a new podcast called LBC Recall, where he commentates on LBC callers and presenters, which is only Johnny Vaughan could do that. It is an absolutely riveting listen. But much to my surprise, I've absolutely bought into Chris Moyles.
Well, here is a clip from the Chris Moyles podcast from last week when he had his birthday and they did the show in the dark. And the star of this clip is Chris Moyles' sausage. Fanar.
Open your mouth, I'm about to shove my sausage in it in 3, 2, 1...
Oh, that's my ear. That was my ear.
I'm sorry.
Oh. Toss the sausage.
Toss it.
Why?
Okay, number two.
Or am I doing it again?
Sausage in my ear, right.
You've got five attempts.
Where you just went before, move slightly in left.
Oh. I'm going to do this with my eyes closed.
All right. I'm just going to cover my eyes in case it's...
Three, two, one. Lunge.
Oh, that's my cheek.
Oh, no.
Oh, just to the right. Oh. Now, you want to go bang in the middle of those two attempts.
Oh, my God, this is a huge one.
Is it?
Yeah.
All right.
It's massive.
I'm covering my eyes in case you poke me.
If I miss your mouth and this goes somewhere else, at least you'll enjoy it. Are you okay? Are you ready?
I'm ready to receive.
Three, two, one.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yes. Yes. Oh my God, that's massive.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you very much. It has been said before.
There's Chris Boyles. Any other business? Let's go around the table.
I'd just like to say that my podcast, I mean, I know we've been talking about LBC, but my The One Show podcast is back as well for season five.
That's funny too.
Thanks very much.
Catherine, what are you working on?
I'm actually going to plug something from my colleagues at Fresh Air Production, where I do a bit of work. And they this week are launching a series called The Big Steal, all about Putin, Russia, and some
I heard a clip at the Audio UK event last week. It sounds fantastic. Very revelatory. Ian?
I've got a book coming out in May. Called
and you've only written about 47 books.
No, well, I've edited books. I've only actually ever written one before, and that was only 15,000. This is a proper book. It's 80,000 words, and it's called Why Can't We All Just Get Along? Shout Less, Listen More. And it's all about the decline in public discourse, particularly on social media, and what can be done about it. And it's sort of a bit autobiographical. I use sort of lots of incidents from my life and broadcasting to illustrate the points I'm trying to make. So that's out in May. I'm going to do the Literary Festival tour in the summer.
Ian Dale, thank you for finally coming on this panel. It took a bit of negotiation, but it was great.
Can I say how pleased I am that Ian didn't get up and walk out as well?
Yes. That's excellent. It is his style.
I'm trying to control myself better.
John Holmes, thank you for not walking out as well. We didn't have to push you either. And Catherine Kerr, thanks to John here at Guilt Free for engineering impeccably as always. Now, next month, here's exciting for you. We should be doing this programme on a stage in Lisbon.
I'm going to be there as well. You could have asked me. Unbelievable.
Really? Yeah. This is the Radio Days Europe. Right, what are you doing at Radio Days Europe?
I'm going to be doing a panel as well, yeah. There we go. I'll see you there.
See you there. That's been the Radio Today Roundtable for March. I've been Trevor Down, and this is Stuart Clarkson.
Thank you, Trevor, and another fantastic episode of our Roundtable monthly discussion. And thanks as well to guests Catherine, John and Ian. Trevor, as he mentioned, will be back at Radio Days Europe for the April 2020 edition. Just ahead of David Lloyd's Radio Moments, a quick word from me to tell you that on next week's podcast, we will have all the reaction from the 2020 ARIA Awards. Yes, there might even be some more celebrities. We'll be talking to people on the red carpet as they arrive at the awards at the Palladium, and we'll hear from some of the big winners as they come off stage, clutching their awards, and walk straight towards my Radio Today microphone. Find out what they have to say on next week's Radio Today programme. Radio
Moments. It's 30 years this week since the original Jazz FM launched in London. It had been the brainchild of bandleader Dave Lee, who wrote to the regulator saying quite simply, we need a jazz station. And here he is counting into a station jingle.
Something new has happened in this town because young people have turned to jazz. We have bebop discos. We have young DJs like Giles Peterson who have created, maybe he did it, I don't know, but he certainly reflects an enormous interest among young people.
I've always loved jazz and blues. It just makes sense to me. I grew up, my dad was a jazz trombonist, so I grew up listening to Sarah Vaughan and Ella Fitzgerald and Duke Ellington and so forth. And they just approached me and said, would you like to be our first presenter? I went, well, yeah.
Diana Luke reflecting the early moments of Jazz FM, 30 years old this week. Happy birthday. And that distinctive and resilient brand has had a rich life under several owners over the years and was even silenced for a time. Witness this from 16 years ago in the Northwest as the frequency became smooth.
This is Steve Collins. It's 4 minutes until midnight, and it's been from the 1st of September 1994. I have to say it's been a great 10 years, but we're looking forward to something bigger and better on 100.4 FM.
100.4 Smooth FM is coming to this frequency in 17 days. Get ready for the Northwest's smooth favourites from 8 a.m. on Tuesday the 2nd of March.
Jazz FM becoming smooth this week in 2004. By the way, smooth has about the same reach in London now as Jazz FM used to have. And in the Northwest, smooth has about three times the audience. Happy birthday to Helen Bowden this week. And it was 20 years ago that she was appointed Radio 4's first female controller for 20 years.
I came in after James Boyle, who'd been a very, very controversial controller because he'd changed the schedule. Almost everything he did, I actually agree with. And I was public about that. But it was very important to do calm and consolidation. And I did lots of relatively modest things with the schedule, like early morning I cleaned up, but I just thought this audience has had enough of schedule changes, and radio's habitual, you have to get to know it over time, so let's just focus on the quality of the content, let's get that right. And we, our audiences went up, they got to over 10 million, which was the highest it had ever been up till then. I mean, it's gone above that now, and we won Sony Station of the Year 2 years in a row, never having won it before. So I was incredibly, superficially, but incredibly pleased by these things.
Helen Bowden, who had been head of current affairs and business. John Peel is often associated with distinctive, perfect late-night radio. And this week, 52 years ago, he made his debut on the BBC's Night Ride programme, aired on Radio 1 and Radio 2. I've got the Radio Times here, actually. He says, featuring tonight, John Peel, exploring the world of words and music in his own special way.
This is the first of a new series of programmes in which you may hear just about anything. This morning we have the incredible string band and poet Adrian Mitchell, and we'll also play records by groups that you may not have heard of that we consider worthy of exposure. This is a record by a group that I used to manage in California that was released about 15 months ago. And it shows you, I think, that groups are capable of making records that never get anywhere that people should hear. And it's unfortunate the group has subsequently broken up. They're called The Misunderstood. And thank you very much for being with me this evening. Over now to John Dunn with the news and the rest of Night Ride.
Thank you, John Peel, very much indeed. One of the sad things about broadcasting is that it tends to interfere with your listening habits, and that was one programme I wanted to hear right through. Never mind. Another night. Let's hope. 1 o'clock, the news summary.
John Peel with John Dunn on Night Ride this week in 1968. 2015 now, and a Radio 1 departure.
To everyone who's worked on the show, listened to the show, all the artists who have given music to us to play on this show and given me an opportunity to do so, I want to say thank you very, very much. And I hope you enjoy, you know, I know you will enjoy listening to the wonderful Annie Mac that's coming Monday from 7 p.m. Right, last song. This is the only one I've chosen tonight. Now, you could get emotional, or you could just shake it out. One band has been a constant for me throughout this whole journey, giving me more one-liners that I passed off as my own, giving me more great music than I could possibly hope to digest in a lifetime. And they've been kind to me, too. This is my last song. Queens of the Stone Age, a song for the dead. You can't even hear it.
Zane Lowe's last Radio 1 show this week, 5 years ago. He went off, of course, to the Beats 1 station from Apple, which was said to be the biggest radio station in the world, beating all other music stations in concurrent listeners. That's what they said, at least. Commercial radio arrived belatedly in Derby this week in 1987. The regulator had added the city to the Nottingham franchise, but that didn't go down too well to those people who wanted their own Derby station. Trent MD Ron Coles remembers the Derby public meeting with the regulator.
I mean, there really was almost a riot in the room. The engineers had put microphones around the place so that people could go and speak and say their piece. Well, these microphones were commandeered by members of opposing groups who just shouted in them. And for some reason, the engineers didn't have the wit to fade them down. So we had a really chaotic, angry, very angry meeting. Everybody had a chance, a sort of last 5 minutes, to say their piece. So somebody got up and said why they thought we shouldn't get it. And our Derby representative went to do his 5 minutes, and the whole audience, as one, got up and walked out.
Trent, 9:45. Designer radio. Radio tailored to suit your lifestyle.
Don't know much about history.
Derbyshire life.
Don't know
Derbyshire
much
style. Trent, 9:45. Reflecting a progressive city, set in one of the most beautiful counties in the United Kingdom.
Oh, the story of Trent 9:45, later Ram FM, and now the frequency part of Capital Midlands. So, with the death of Tommy Vance 15 years ago,
on Radio 1.
And this is the top 40 as compiled for the BBC by the British Market Research Bureau. Hi.
The launch of Lynx FM 28 years ago.
At last, the wait is over. Welcome to Lynx FM 102.2. It's Sunday the 1st of March 1992. I'm Nick Jackson until 12 o'clock midday.
Simon Mayo making his Radio 1 debut 34 years ago.
Simon Mayo through till 3 o'clock today, and Gary did say, please make your bit in the middle as much like mine as possible, except not quite as brown.
The beginnings of the short-lived Huddersfield FM 21 years ago. Radio 4's Scud FM ending 29 years ago.
This is Radio 4 News FM. We're approaching 12 o'clock.
And Housewives' Choice launching on the BBC Light programme 74 years ago.
Well now, let's have a look at the next card. To Caroline Gardens, High Howden-on-Tyne. And it's Mrs. Howling writing with grandmotherly pride all about her daughter Marjorie living at 15 Burden Street, Percy, Maine, whose little daughter Janet is just about all the world to them both. Well, recording artist Dickie Valentine is their pin-up boy. So here's the 6-5 special hit song, King of Dixieland.
Those are this week's Radio Moments.
The Radio Today programme with Broadcast Bionics.
Original music for this podcast was composed by Macasso.